Welcome to this episode of the Long Haul Chronic Fatigue Summit. I'm so happy to have with me today my friend and colleague, Beth O'Hara of MassCell 360. Beth, welcome. I'm so happy you're here.
It's a pleasure to be here with you. I'm so excited to do this because I think what we're going to talk about in this role with mast cells has been one of the real under-recognized and missing pieces in what's happening with people with long haul syndrome.
I definitely agree with you. I think it's something that occurs with people who have complex chronic illness in general. We see it in our patients who have post-infectious illnesses. And I think that COVID is long haul is no different. You know, in fact, there's research, which we were just talking about prior to this. So we'll be diving into that as well. But let's start by having you introduce yourself to our audience.
Well, I'm Beth O'Hara. I'm the founder of MassCell 360. And this is the practice I wish it existed when I was really ill, dealing with mast cell activation, mold toxicity, and tick-borne illnesses, chronic fatigue, and I was debilitated. And now we provide all of these resources online for people. We have self-paced courses, and we have a clinic all focused on mast cell activation syndrome and serving that population. And it's been interesting, the uptick of people reaching out or coming into the practice or accessing our resources and using our courses that have gone through long hauler. And what I'm so excited about sharing today is the successes that they're getting in paying attention to the mast cell side of this, because I think this is the big, I don't know that we're dealing with viral anymore when we're at this tail end of the long haulers. I think we're dealing with this really dysregulated immune system that needs to be settled down. And I can talk about what we're seeing in terms of who's developing long haulers, at least just anecdotally, observationally, who's developing long haulers, who is not.
Fantastic. And I agree with you. I think it is post-viral. I think the virus has gone away, but it stirred up so much inflammation and then immune dysregulation. It's actually causing pandemonium in the immune system. And yeah, cell activation is a huge part of that. Thank you for the work you're doing around this. It's wonderful, wonderful work. So I think that a lot of people watching might not know yet what mast cells are or what mast cell activation syndrome is. So Beth, will you start by guiding them? Tell them what mast cells are.
Yes. And I'll link it into why do we care if we're dealing with long haulers. Mast cells are one of the frontline sensing defending cells of the immune system. And what are they sensing and defending us from? Well, they're sensing viruses, bacteria, molds, candida, parasites. They're also sensing for things like toxins, chemical toxins, mold toxins, even EMFs they register, and a myriad of other things we don't have time to fit into. It's quite amazing how versatile these cells are and what they do in our bodies. And they're one of the most complex cells in the body, if not probably, I can't say the most complex because I can't prove that right now, but I think they're probably one of the top most complex. And they have over 200 receptors outside of them. So they're sensing all kinds of, even medications, they sense medications. So this is important. And I want to come back to, so I want people to tuck this in the back of their head. They are sensing every neurotransmitter, and they're at every ending, every nerve ending, and along every nerve sheath. So they're literally sensing every thought that we have. And what they're, if we just boil it down, they're looking for, in a nutshell, are we safe? Are we in danger? And then based on what's happening inside our body or outside of our body, how do we respond to that and protect ourselves? They are found in every tissue in the body except the retina, even in the brain. So if you think about this, every tissue, so in our brain, through our entire nervous system, they're actually the interface between the nervous system and the rest of the body. They're the interface for the immune system and the rest of the body in many ways. The hormone system, they're one of the major interfaces. And they're in every organ. So we're talking about the thyroid. We're talking about they're in the lungs. They're in the heart. They're in the liver, the kidneys, they're in the bladder. They are in the whole GI tract, in very high numbers from the mouth down the esophagus through the intestines. So that's important to know as we're talking about what's happening for people long hauler and this variety of symptoms that they're getting and why these cases are showing up so differently in different people. Then inside these mast cells, they have over 1,000 mediators. So these are chemicals that they can release either selectively, depending on what's going on, or if they're really, really dysregulated, they can release them all at once, total degranulation, and that can trigger things like anaphylaxis. So these mast cells, the role in what we're talking about today is to monitor for viruses and pathogens, one of their major roles, and then to produce inflammation to protect us. So we think about when we first start to get sick, we get, you get that swelling in your sinuses, you get all this post-nasal drip, and we can start coughing, sneezing. That's not actually, for people who are not aware of this, the virus causing that, that's the immune system to protect us. And then in normal mast cell functioning, they should release these inflammatory mediators and calm back down. And the most common one that people know is histamine. So people think about antihistamines, but then also they are a major player. They're not the only player, but a major player in cytokines. And that's become a household name or household word. They release prostaglandins, interleukins, all these different types of chemicals. And in normal functioning, that's very protective and helpful. What happens is if we have an onslaught of too much load from toxins, too much load from pathogens and or stressors, which could include trauma, or could include just your daily, I'm trying to get through rush hour traffic and work a stressful job, get home and get three dinner on the table for two or three kids and get their homework done and get to bed. And I don't have a minute to breathe all day long. That's a major stressor. All of us are living now in this environment of this toxic soup. We have so much toxin load in our environment. We have chemical toxins, molds at this epidemic level. So I'm transitioning into why people are getting these mast cell issues. We're constantly bombarded by EMFs. We're eating all these packaged processed foods. So we're living in ways that we've never lived in before in human history. All it takes is that straw on the camel's back to tip somebody into mast cell dysregulation. And that's what we call mast cell activation syndrome.
Thank you. I love that response because it encompasses everything that we're exposed to. Infections, it's not just SARS-CoV-2, it's many other viruses. Moles, like you say, parasites, environmental toxins, and the stress, the day-to-day stress. And the thing is, Beth, people used to think, and I think a lot of them still do, that mast cells are about modulating just your allergic response. And then that's why you might have heard it. People might often say, I don't have mast cell activation syndrome because I don't have a runny nose. But as you said, the mast cells are everywhere, literally all over our tissues. And so then people get symptoms in all of these places. And I think that they're contributing, these symptoms are contributing to long haul, that in addition to all these triggers that you just discussed, the onslaught of chemicals, toxins, infections. And I love the way you just wrap that up so neatly, right? For our audience to understand, because I think a lot of people listening to the summit might not know much about this yet because they're newly sick in this pandemic, whereas the people who've been listening to us have been sick for a long time. And so this, I think, is this is news to many people. So this is an important conversation. Thank you.
Well, the other reason I really want people to pay attention to what we're going to talk about today and why I think this can be a game changer is that mast cell activation syndrome already before the pandemic was one of the most under-recognized conditions facing the general population. The population studies were showing up to 17% of the general population dealing with mast cell activation syndrome, and had most of them had no idea that's what they're dealing with. We don't have a repeat study, population study, post-COVID or post-pandemic. Not that we're post-pandemic entirely, but we don't have an updated one, but we have a lot of studies validating that this virus is triggering mast cells. And these studies, there was in 2021, the first published theory study, or I think 2020, on hyperinflammation and mast cells and COVID. So that was published by Larry Afrin, Weinstock, and others. They just re-upped that, and they did an updated study in 2021. Dr. Theo Harides has linked mast cell activation with cardiovascular symptoms, with cytokine storms, with brain fog, and with the lung conditions that are going on. And I solidly think, this is my opinion, but I do think the research is going to play out that we now have a much higher percent of people dealing with mast cell activation syndrome now that we've got this new virus that we're facing that we've not ever had to develop antibodies to before. And that's quite significant, because addressing the mast cells is one of the major pieces in terms of being able to settle this down. And there was even, I found a study of his, when preparing for this, that was just published in October of this, of 2022. And it was on pathophysiology of post-COVID syndromes, which is another word for long hauler syndrome, talking about this dysregulated release of this inflammation from the mast cells producing this huge variety of symptoms people can have in long haulers. And I just want to validate their study showing, their study came out on showing that it dysregulates hormones. And we've seen all these women who have started menstruating again, who were in menopause. We've seen these different types of things, and they've been told that they were crazy and that couldn't happen. And I just want to let people know, well, the research keeps coming out, validating what people are experiencing.
Thank you for bringing this up. And you will provide the audience with the links, which I'm very happy about as well. So thank you. It does validate everything we've been doing, right? Because prior to this pandemic, you and I have been working with people who have complex chronic illness. And there was some research, but just not enough. And so we had hypotheses, many of them. And we're seeing these hypotheses actually come out in the papers about infections, post-infection states. So it's, you know, I'd say a silver lining to this pandemic is all of the research that's coming out and helping us understand complex chronic illness from an immunological point of view. And from the point of view of understanding mast cell activation syndrome, even, right, the research was just so small. And now it's out there, and it is validating. So
it's huge. And so in people who, well, I want to back up for a minute and just say that when I heard about the virus in being in Wuhan, I knew at that point we were in trouble. And I know many of us were watching that. Even they were saying, oh, well, it's not going to move out of China. Well, I knew that we needed to keep an eye on this. And as soon as it spread through China, I started seeing, what can I find out about this? Because I knew it was coming.
Right.
Globally.
Yeah.
And I was reading everything I get my hands on and spending about 20 hours a weekend in my off time. And the reason was because we work with, and in our clinic, like your clinic, such a severely ill population. And I was terrified that we were going to lose half of a population. I really was terrified. And that didn't play out. Fortunately, we have, just to give people context, we have people who come in for our clinic. We have a consulting clinic that works remotely across the country. And we were having people coming in that they couldn't drink water. They were in wheelchair, 20 seizures a day. And our job is to look at what's been missing and turn over other stones and help support them and what they're dealing with. So so people understand just how sick they were. You know, we've had people with skin peeling off in sheets because of the amount of fungal load that they had. And that's why I was so concerned for them. In this whole, and I can only speak from what I'm observing. And then when it's, you know, validated in a study, I'll talk about that. But just speaking from my observations, since then, our whole population, we've only had 2 hospitalizations. And we've had a lot of people who came in with long haulers after they had developed it. The majority of our population has also had this virus. And one of the things I really wanted to track was who developed long haulers and who didn't. Mm-hmm. So out of 173 people that I tracked, we had 2 people develop long haulers. Mm-hmm. Just 2.
So these were patients who were already your patients and then they got the virus?
Yes. So because we do consulting, I say clients, but yes. So they were already here. They were already working. That's what I really want to share with people. Yeah. And I think that this will start, just like we're seeing all these studies come out validating people's symptom experiences, I think we're going to start seeing more coming out. Just takes time to get these studies together.
Right.
But in the meantime, I, as a consultant and somebody who really wants to support people, I have to figure out, what are we doing? What are we going to do? And then 2 people total in the whole population that while they were acutely ill had been hospitalized. Mm-hmm. But then I had all these people coming in that had not been doing the program, who had developed long haulers. So I got to look side by side, what are the differences in these cases? And a large number of them had been hospitalized when they were in the acute phases. Mm-hmm. So what was the difference? The major differences that we've seen have been the level of nervous system supports people were doing on their vagal and limbic system, mm-hmm. and the amount of mast cell supports that they had on board. And I want to talk about what some of those are and people have been using. And then when they caught the virus, they already had that going. And when we customize some of these, I don't have general protocols and I don't treat any of this. So I do support and consulting, like I said, but that really has made a massive difference for people. And then the people who came in with severe long haulers and they were not functioning, they couldn't work anymore, they had this severe fatigue and all of these issues, we did the same things. So let's get them going on the nervous system supports, let's really beef up on the mast cell side. And for those people, they all came through and there's not been any residual. I've only had 2 clients with residual long haulers, and they were not doing the full program that we were talking about. They were mixing, and I understand, and I fully supported them in what they wanted to do, but they were really getting into the antiviral medications. And I didn't see it move the needle. It has for some people, but I didn't see it move the needle for them. Mm-hmm. So now we've gone, and I said, okay, we tried all that. Can we please just come back and do what we know has been working, and let's give it a solid shot. Uh-huh. So we'll see where those 2, but 2 out of 173 is a really good, really good rate there for people.
It's fantastic.
Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. And we're seeing actually very similar to you. I haven't parsed out in the numbers. Now you're inspiring me. I love that you did that. It's fantastic. But that the people who were already existing patients they haven't really developed long haul. Who has long haul are the new patients, you know, because the patients who are our existing patients, we've been treating their other infections. Usually it's Lyme, usually it's mold, parasites, or maybe they've already had Epstein-Barr virus that they were treating. Of course, we're always supporting their mast cells, because most of these patients, like you're saying, do have mast cell activation syndrome, because their mast cells are all over their body. So we're supporting the whole system. Then they get the virus, but they don't get long haul because everything else is being supported.
Yes. And I think this is where, again, what we're missing is this role of the mast cells in long haul. And there was a November 2022 study, and this was on mast cells' role in cytokine release syndrome and related manifestations of COVID. So this was the way they were describing different ways that it could show up. Mm-hmm. And then some of our our long haul type experiences. And they said the role of mast cells in the SARS-CoV-2 induced hyperinflammation cytokine storms have been one of the hottest topics in literature. And physicians should keep in mind that mast cells' role in cytokine release syndrome and related manifestations of COVID-19. So this, I'm just reading directly.
Yeah.
Mast cell targeting. So mast cell targets, meaning the types of protocols, the supplements, and various other supports like H1 and H2 receptor blockers. Those are H1 antihistamines, and H2 means famotidine. Can reduce the severity and course when used after complications are suspected or seen. That just came out in November 2022. And so that's the very beginning of what we've been talking about. And practitioners like you and like at our clinic and so many across the country, we're having these, you know, conversations about what's working for you and what's working for you and cobbling this stuff together. And we're starting to see it validated.
I love it. That makes me so happy to see it validated, right?
Yeah, because then people can really get help. And what's been happening is, you know, people, when you're a traditional medicine practitioner and you've got 10 minutes per patient, and then you have all these controls of standard of care and how that's been defined, and these fears of the, what if you do something the medical board doesn't approve of? It takes years for those kinds of standards to catch up. And I just bring that out so people understand what they've been up against. And it's easy to blame. I hear people blame their practitioner, but I want people to realize it's much bigger than that. It's that there's standards and care in place for good reason. And it takes a long time, though, for those to start to change and catch up with the research. So this is why I'm so happy people are being proactive. And really, this has been like a grassroots movement. And even, you know, people report back like, this is what I noticed, and this is what I noticed. And we see all this stuff happen in the messaging boards. And you can't just go based on that. Like, you need somebody to put this together for you, understands the whole context. But it's been incredible the amount of just proactive lay people, everyday people struggling with this and been pushing us forward. And this is what we've seen in the mast cell space as well, as the research is catching up. And it's wonderful. This is wonderful. And this is what really defines who gets well, is the people who are really proactive.
It's true. It's true. And I love that you're bringing up the piece about medicine being slow, right? Research being slow. And so some things have to be at the grassroots. It is talking to each other, what has worked for you. It is those messaging boards. It's doctors teaching each other and the science catching up. And it is amazing to see it catching up slowly, but surely.
Yeah, it's coming. And the key is in the meantime that we do what we know is common sense to take care of ourselves when we're not well. And to take care of ourselves all the time, because the other people that I see who are developing complications, or let me just say they're developing the long haulers, is that's the direction I want to go in.
Yeah.
Either had significant underlying health issues that weren't being resolved. A lot of them have had mold toxicity already, tick-borne layers already. But some people just weren't living healthy lifestyles. You know, they're working 60 hours a week, not getting enough sleep, not getting sunshine, not getting vitamin D, eating a lot of packaged and processed foods and eating out a lot. So immune systems were already depleted. So whether in the development of long haulers, it's really like, how depleted are you already, either from this unhealthy lifestyle, but you still seem to be able to keep going?
Right.
People don't realize they're teetering on the edge, or you've already been sick for a while. But these people who have been sick for a while, they're already doing protocols. They're already supporting themselves.
Right.
And what's so fascinating to me was that it wasn't that population that got hit as hard. It was everybody who is living this standard Western way of unhealthy life,
right,
that we need to change. And it all it takes is, that's what I was talking about before, the straw that breaks the camel's back. And I don't even know that it's necessarily the virus. I think it could have been the virus. It could have been a death in the family. It could have been the, it could have been a toxin load. It could have been the flu. It's just that then they got tipped into, and I'm sure you're going to have talks on cell danger response. They got tipped into that cell danger response.
Right.
And we just had all these people once get exposed to this COVID virus, but mm-hmm. it could have been something else. And then on top of that, I think what we also have to add is that on top of that, we had this global terror.
Uh-huh.
So we had the stress of it. And the media intensity and frenzy of all of that. And that just added to the stress load. So going back to what triggers mast cell activation is the same that triggers, I think, in my own opinion, what triggers long COVID, what triggers all of these different avenues leading us into the cell danger response, which is too much pathogen load and or too much toxin load and or too much stress or trauma load.
Right. We're on the same page. There's just so much juiciness, so much meat you brought forward, right? First of all, I thought that our patient population would be severely affected and be in the state of long COVID, but they weren't. It wasn't them, because they were already being treated for everything else that would cause the terrain of their body or the immune system to be more susceptible to developing long haul. They didn't. It was these new patients who had all of these stressors, including the global trauma and everything else that you just mentioned, right? And it's, I think it's really eye-opening, actually, because it hasn't been considered. All the other factors leading to long haul might not just be the virus, plays a role, spike protein plays a role, but there's so much else in the system leading to mast cell activation syndrome, immune dysregulation. And
yeah.
And
I'd love to talk about at least things people can look into for themselves.
Great.
And I want to really frame it in the framework of, do your research. I don't know if what I'm sharing is right for you. And these are just the things that I'm seeing in my specific population, but I'm not saying this is the exact right thing for everybody. And it's really helpful when these things get customized. I'd love to add to this that I actually had COVID in January 2020. And I didn't know what it was. We had flown to Las Vegas, and a lot of people were sick on the plane, way more than usual. And I just remember sitting there going, what is going on? This is not usual. And the person, I was ended up in a middle seat, which I hate, you know, being in the middle seat, but yeah. I ended up in the middle seat. And this woman next to me was just coughing her lungs out, waxy, sweaty, should have been flying. And I remember thinking, oh no. And then in checking to make sure she's not going to pass out, you know, because I was worried about her. So then coming back, the flight back was the exact same scenario. And a different person next to me, but exact same symptoms, and I'm really ill. And I'm watching her make sure she's not going to pass out. And you think about how much Las Vegas is a huge international hub, the airport there. So then about 2 days after I got home, I developed symptoms. My husband was sick and one of our travel companions was sick. Interestingly, the fourth one didn't get anything. But I had a pretty significant case and I was struggling to breathe. I had trouble even just walking across the room for 6 weeks after, because I would be panting. I'd just be, and my husband would be like, are you okay? Did you just go for a run? And I don't run. And I was like, no, I just came from my office and walked to the kitchen. So that's what was going on. But at 6 weeks, now here's the problem for me. We moved. Uh-huh. We had bought a house right before we went to Las Vegas, closed on it right after we got back. We had to move 3 weeks after I had gotten sick. And I had only taken a week off of work for the move. So that, I think, delayed what it took for my breathing and fatigue to recover. But some of the things that I can share that I think really helped me pull out of the rest of that. So I had, you know, these longer symptoms of fatigue that lasted for about 3 months. And one of the things that I actually did with for the breathing, the fatigue, was exercise with oxygen. Mm-hmm. And I used an oxygen concentrator and I would breathe the oxygen. I could only walk at a really slow pace when I started for 10 minutes. And then I built up very, very slowly. But that really helped me with this long hauler side of things. Mm-hmm. And then I still didn't know what we were dealing with, because at that time it was thought there was no way it could have been in the U.S. And the way that I know now that that's what I had was that as soon as the antibody testing became reliable, I had still had positive antibodies. But I kept my mast cell supports really boosted, because I knew, even though I didn't know, I thought it had the flu, I thought I had walking pneumonia. Even though I didn't really know what had gone on, I knew I was in this mast cell flare. So I was working with the H1 and histamines. So for me, Claritin, and Ketotifen, hydroxyzine. But other people use things like Allegra or Zyrtec. And then Famotidine, which is Pepcid's a brand name. And that's an H2, even though it's marketed as an acid blocker. It's an H2 receptor blocker for the mast cells in the GI tract. Then I kept my quercetin boosted, resveratrol, olive leaf, passion flower. These things are really mast cell supporting. And the inflammation was high. And I just knew that 2,000 milligrams a day is what's typically used of curcumin for this kind of hyperinflammation. Now, what I'm describing is not what something someone super sensitive would bump up to, but this is what I was able to do. Mm-hmm. And so I was doing those. I was doing low dose naltrexone to help balance my immune system. I was taking Nigella sativa, which is called black cumin seed oil.
You were already practicing a lot of the FLCCC stuff before, right?
Right. And I didn't know, you know, I was just going after the mast cells. That's what I was doing.
Yeah.
And then I love Chinese skullcap baekeleyn, which was really great for neural inflammation. And we've seen neural inflammation now, reports are coming out with long haul syndrome and these types of things, as well as restless legs, mm-hmm. which I wanted to tell people, because that's such a mystifying thing, has been linked to the mast cell involvement.
Right.
So I was doing those and I really bumped my vitamin D up. So I went up to about 20,000 I used for a few days, and I kept it at 10,000 for a while.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite things for mast activation, though, is bicarbonates, just straight baking soda.
Uh-huh.
If blood pressure is low, and that's another thing that's really arisen for people is POTS and this blood pressure dropping that contributes to the fatigue. And so when blood pressure is low, the baking soda, the sodium stabilizes mast cells, helps bring the blood pressure back up so you can get blood to your brain.
Mm-hmm.
And then bicarbonates regulate a mechanism that controls inflammasome production that then can settle down the mast cells. So that's such a simple one. Or people with high blood pressure, I always encourage them to work with their provider, and they can try potassium bicarbonate. It's a little trickier, so people need to navigate that with somebody who's helped them to monitor, especially if they're on blood pressure meds, just to be careful.
Yeah.
But those were some of the things, the vitamin C, the resveratrol. I bumped the SPMs I was taking way up, that activated form of omegas, omega-3s.
Yeah.
And then I did a lot of nervous system work. So limbic and vagal work. And then this is the overall approach. It's evolved a little. Mm-hmm. And then it has to get customized because we have people with so many different types of sensitivities coming through us, whether they've got salicylate intolerance or what they're dealing with, or they may have such a pathogen, dormant pathogen load, like a tick-borne load, that the Nigella sativa may be way too strong for them. So this is where it can help to work with the provider to get these kinds of things customized. And I don't do I don't do blanket protocols, but I can just share what worked for me.
Yeah.
And then a lot of people, I remember this one man, Nafisa, he came in, he had been hospitalized numerous times when he had the acute infectious phase. And then he had lost his father to COVID. He had been in the, he'd been hospitalized on a ventilator and didn't make it. So not only did he have long haulers when he came in, he had this heavy load of grief. And so many people, I wanted to share that because so many people experienced losses during this.
Yes.
And then we couldn't go to funerals. I lost a dear friend during the pandemic, not from COVID, but cancer. I couldn't go to the funeral, you know, so that you don't get that normal closure. So we just have had all these social oddities that have added to that stressor load for us. And he's just one example, but he couldn't work. He could hardly function for more than about 2 hours a day. He was having trouble with extreme brain fog. He was still having trouble with breathing. And we just started working through the method that, that we use at our clinic. I call them MC360 method. And really for him, this emphasis on nervous system work to help him feel safe again, because he'd been really close to his dad. And even though he was an adult man, I mean, his dad had been his safety,
right?
His point of safety. So he had to reestablish this point of safety. Just tying it back to what we talked about in the beginning, mast cells are monitoring for safety. Am I safe? Am I not safe? And if I'm not safe, let me produce a lot of inflammation. And I just realized I want to connect also. This is why we see all these different symptom presentations, because it depends on which mast cells are being dysregulated, the GI tract ones, the heart ones, the ones in the brain, the ones in the bladder, muscles, the bones, which ones are affecting people, and which receptors are getting triggered, and which of the 200 receptors, and which of the 1,000 mediators, and which combination. So you get almost an uncalculable number of permutations of presentations for mast cell issues. And that's what's made this mystifying for so long.
Right.
It doesn't have to be that way. And that's why this education is so important, and this summit that you're doing is so important. And I talked before about the mast cells lining every nerve ending being it, or and lining every nerve sheath, and literally sensing every single thought. So an illustration of that is, some of my background is in the mind-body connections with the nervous system and the immune system. And some of the studies that I did for my master's. And so in working with that, one of my initial symptoms of mast cell activation is my fingers swell, my knuckles will swell. Mm. So I just retried cashews for the first time, which are typically pretty inflammatory and high histamine. And my fingers were like, boom, they were just blown up. So like, oh, nope, no cashews. But not everybody presents that way, but it's an easy one I can track. And I would do experiments of working myself into an anxious loop in my mind. Mm-hmm. And within 2 or 3 minutes, I'm actually starting to get some swelling now, thinking about doing it. My knuckles start to swell. And then I've done a lot of nervous system training, so I can shift myself with my intention now mm-hmm. into my parasympathetic nervous system state, and that rest, digest, and heal. And that state's right. So critical for healing. And then just literally watch over a few minutes, the inflammation will drain out of my fingers. That's the mast cell nervous system interface. Mm-hmm. And that's how it works. And it works that quickly. This is how people can have a reaction from just smelling something. They have a reaction from as soon as they put food in their mouth, they could have diarrhea that quickly, because it's traveling through the nervous system signals to the other mast cells and other parts of the body.
Right.
And it also means that that's such a powerful entry point into settling mast cell dysregulation through settling the nervous system. So tying this back in with this man that I was describing, this case, he ended up doing a good bit of grief therapy, mm-hmm. help process the loss and to give him closure, because they didn't get to have the normal closure that you'd have with a community and your funeral and your family and people coming to visit and bringing you casseroles and all the things we do when somebody passes. So he had to recreate some of that for himself. And then he worked a lot on his limbic system and vagal nerve. He was still exposed to mold. And I think that really contributed to the severity of his symptoms. So he got out of mold. He worked on a lot of the things we just talked about on the mast cell side. And it took time because he was in really rough shape when he came in. But I think it was 9 or 10 months later, he was back to work. And then he just moved. He was strong enough to move across the country, take a new job. And he's back to working at the level that he used to work, the professional level. And that's the kind of story we see over and over. I just want to share that to give people hope. Other people I've seen, that was a really intense case. Mm-hmm. Other people I've seen turn around in 2-3 months. And a lot of people are doing what he described to support themselves as soon as they suspect they might have a little sniffle, and they're having really short durations and then just coming back out, and in a week or two, they're back to normal. So there's so much that we can do now. And I want people to know that, and to know that we really can take care of ourselves and protect ourselves. And it's just understanding the underlying mechanisms so we can target what's most effective.
Thank you. There is absolutely so much that we can do now. And it's just been on the sidelines, but now we're bringing it forward. And so thank you. Thank you, Beth, for being somebody who brings that information forward to people. You do it well, and you're making an impact. And thank you.
Thank you so much. I was really happy to see the summit coming. There are still people that come in that are still terrified, even though seem to be kind of calming down, some of the global trauma is calming down. We haven't healed the global trauma of this. Yeah. We're just kind of pretending like it's all okay, and that we can go back about our days normally. And I think even in addition to give people hope, and to give them strategies, there's so many strategies, and people are going to hear so many different possibilities, and they have to see what resonates with them and what is the best approach for their case. And all these different strategies work for the right people. And I say it's about the right things at the right time.
Right.
The right exactly. order for who you are. And I think that in addition to all of that, giving these practical tools, where you're also creating this healing space for people to realize that they can be okay and to start to recover just from the emotional and social and mental challenges that they've been facing for a few years here that, you know, we haven't had in decades and decades.
Right.
So not my lifetime.
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's a brand new a trauma, an epidemic, the first I've seen in my lifetime too, and hopefully the last, but it has this lasting impact, and we're here to give people hope, because we do give them personalized medicine. Everything you told them is so important, but also, like you said, the right medicine, the right time, the right person. You can give someone the right medicine at the wrong time and it just doesn't work. And what is gold for another person could be garbage for another person. And so that's why patients need to work with somebody like you or myself or other people on this summit, because we make it personalized.
Yeah.
And that's key.
It is key. It makes a big difference. And in the meantime, people have some starting steps. And every time I've gotten a sniffle, I've actually, or anyone in my household has a sniffle, I've started taking care of my mast cells and doing these things I know to do. I have been exposed now 3 times, somebody who was actively sick, and have not had another recurrence so far, fingers crossed.
Fantastic.
Now, that may not be the same for everybody else, but I do think there's a lot of power in really keeping our diets clean and nourishing, getting a lot of sleep, getting plenty of sleep, making sure we're getting clean air and we're living in a as good air quality as we can get, as good water quality, food quality as we can get. And then really paying attention to, am I starting to feel run down? How do I boost myself? How do I support myself? Am I somebody else in my household starting to get run down? So I'm getting exposed to something possibly. What do I do to support myself? And there's so much, it's easier to turn around a rowboat than a cruise ship. So get on it while you're still in the rowboat.
Yes.
And that can also make a big difference. But if you're on the cruise ship and you're trying to turn around the cruise ship, there's a lot that you can do. And many, many people are showing that this stuff is working.
It sure is. Thank you so much for such a great interview. And Beth, how can they find you? Tell them your website.
We have so many resources for people dealing with mast cell activation issues. So if you've had long hauler, our studies are showing that you've got mast cell dysregulation, if that's what's going on. And we have a ton of resources for people to get started. And they can go just onto the website. It's MAST, M-A-S-T as in Tom, C-E-L-L, 360, mastcell360.com. And we have an incredible community on Facebook. I'd love for people to join. And we do free Facebook Lives most Mondays. People can catch all kinds of stuff and not have to feel alone anymore. That's really what I created it for.